KBOO is currently running a Kickstarter campaign to build a city of media makers. From February 8th to March 9th, you can become a media maker and help spread the word. Just go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter between now and March 9th to join.
Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Radio trains media makers. We believe community resilience happens when citizens know how to make their own media. For the last 50 years, KBOO has trained thousands of citizen journalists to report on what goes on in the streets of Portland and far beyond. We know that, with our expertise and your support, we can keep this city activated and aware through radio. Invest in Portland's future media makers and join KBOO on Kickstarter today.
Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire. My name is Pierre Fogarang, and we're supposed to have a guest. I'm not sure if we're getting hold of him yet. His name is Patrick Bond, and he's a professor in South Africa at the University of Witwatersrand, also known as Wits University. And he wrote a very interesting article in Pambazuka News about how the World Bank is looting Africa. And if you're interested in news from Africa, I really recommend Pambazuka News. They have a lot of interesting articles, and you just go to their website and you can subscribe to it, and they'll send you, I guess about every week I get an email from them with a list of their articles, and more than one person can read. But if you're really interested in African affairs, Pambazuka is a good place to go. But anyway, they had this article by Patrick Bond. He describes how the World Bank came out with a big report on this sort of explains, it's sort of interesting because they show how they offer evidence of how much poorer Africa is because of what's going on there. But at the same time, their policies and practices maintain this thing. And basically what it extraction of resources. And they, a lot of people measure African prosperity by the income that, what they call gross, the World Bank calls it adjusted net savings, and it measures changes in wealth. But it leaves out the whole factor of depletion of mineral resources. And wealth, you can increase your wealth. Wealth can, if you manage it right, wealth can be sustainable at some level. But extraction of resources is not sustainable. Once the resources are extracted, they are gone. They are either made use of and then turned into waste or whatever. But so you have these depletion versus a kind of sustainable wealth policy. And so the World Bank report goes into great detail about this, but it leaves out this, overlooks or ignores this very important factor of the resource depletion. Oh, yes, for people who want to look it up, Pambazuka is spelled P-A-M-B-A-Z-U-K-A, Pambazuka. So just look it up, and you'll find all kinds of interesting information there. I guess we don't have our guest yet. We're trying to get hold of him in South Africa, but if we can't talk to, if we don't get a hold of him, I really recommend that you go to Pambazuka and read his article. It's very interesting. He gives some good examples. One has to do with copper in Zambia, and there's another interesting report on the looting of Africa. It's sort of separate from the article in Pambazuka. This is a report. It's called Honest Accounts with a question mark after it. And it's a report that was commissioned by the Jubilee Debt Campaign and Health Poverty Action, Friends of the Earth, and a bunch of other organizations. And they commissioned this this report on the money that goes. Oh, we have our guest on the line. Patrick Bond, are you there?
I am indeed. I'm in South Africa.
Oh, very good. I was afraid you wouldn't be able to get hold of you. I described a little bit about the article you wrote for Pambazuka, and I was just mentioning a different report which people can look up. It's called Honest Accounts, that tells about how every year $134 billion goes into Africa and $192 billion comes out. So Africa has a net loss of $58 billion a year. So I recommend my listeners look that article up. It goes into great detail. But now we will talk to Patrick Bond about his article on the looting of Africa. So
And I'll add that the author of that report is Mark Curtis, the activists who put it out are Global Justice Now. That's a sort of anti-corporate globalization movement of Britain. It's excellent, but you know what? It just does the financial account. So what the new debate is, should we not also include the physical accounts of the resources of Africa, especially the minerals, also oil and gas? They're getting ripped out without any reinvestment. And that's what's, in a way, what's newsworthy, because you're right, there's about $40 to $60 billion every year, depends on the price of commodities in the year, net loss from this continent. But that doesn't include now the actual value of minerals, petroleum, gas, and that actually adds up to roughly $120 billion. So it's an addition to the $40 to $60 billion. It just means there's a systematic value transfer that the North, through the corporations, has a systematic way of looting this continent.
Well, I guess I was telling our listeners before you came on that you know, that wealth can be sustained if you do it right, but once a resource is extracted, it's gone for good.
That's right. It's non-renewable, unless you can find some dinosaurs running around turning into fossil fuel. Obviously, we want to keep the fossil fuel underground. Maybe we could talk about the techniques of compensating the poorest countries so that they don't exploit fossil fuels and create climate change. But I would just compare it with your native Norway. The difference really between Norway and Africa is that the Norwegians found oil and they used a state company, Statoil, to plow the profits back. And so if you're in Norway, free education, free healthcare, an extremely high quality of life that's subsidized from this huge resource base. In Africa, it's not the corporations or the state from inside Africa, it's from the United States. It's from Canada, it's from the EU, the European Union, from also the BRICS, the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa bloc. Those companies are taking the resources out and putting nothing back, basically a very tiny fraction. And that's really the difference between Norway, which is resource rich and can recycle the profits, versus Africa, which is just getting looted by transnational capital using local allies. And it's so tragic. You know, today we have a new president here in South Africa who comes from the mining industry, and he was the hitman, effectively, for for Lonmin, the big company from London, the third biggest platinum company. And Cyril Ramaphosa, our new president, was a 9% owner of this company in 2012, and there was a wildcat strike, and Cyril Ramaphosa arranged that the police would come. They massacred 34 people, striking workers, more or less unarmed. They just had a few little sticks and spears, and these big police vans rolled up and just shot them dead. It's a famous massacre, 2012, and that comes from the guy today that was put in as president because he was acting in the interests of a London company, Lonmin, that was looting this continent, looting this country, and particularly putting its profits into Bermuda in a tax haven through misinvoicing, a little scam in which they claimed it was a big marketing project. They only had two employees. And our new president was party to that. That's how sickening this situation has become.
Well, didn't he used to be a mining union leader?
That's right. If you know your trade union history, in South Africa, the 1980s is when the trade union movement came of age. And in the mining sector, this young lawyer from the north of the country moved into Soweto, connected in as a lawyer, and then became the head of the major trade union. At one point had about 230,000 members, the National Union of Mine Workers. And that was extraordinary. He was a heroic figure. Cyril Ramaphosa arranged the first big national strike in 1987 of mine workers ever. Phenomenal. And then in 91, he was promoted to become the organizer in chief of the African National Congress under its new president, just out of jail, Nelson Mandela. And in 1994, Mandela won, and he had hoped to be the vice president. He was going to be the sort of logical local vice president, but instead Mandela said, no, I'll bring this exiled vice president, Thabo Mbeki. So Ramaphosa was pushed aside. He arranged for the constitution to be written, but then he went into business, and this is such a tragic trajectory for our comrades, our liberation movement leaders, who just got greedy. And when he got greedy, he did a lot of very awful things in big business. He was actually the McDonald's and Coca-Cola franchise holder, amongst many other business deals. He became a dollar billionaire. But yeah, that's the same guy. And then he arranges a massacre at Marikana and massive outflows of illegal capital for tax dodging. What a tragedy. And today, quite an irony, the left-wing party in the parliament did walk out. He was becoming anointed the president. You might have heard that late last night, the outgoing president, just mired in corruption, Jacob Zuma, was forced to resign by his own party. It was so embarrassing, so disgusting. And this guy, Zuma, also was connected to corrupt multinationals, especially an Indian family, very deep into uranium and coal mining, called the Gupta brothers, and they're now on the run. They're being arrested. Their top people were arrested yesterday, and they've been dodging arrest. They're kind of O.J. Simpson in the Bronco on the highway kind of situation here. An amazing time for us. And yeah, mining, looting the continent, and the compradors, the local elites who were allied with the process, are part and parcel of this this great crime.
Didn't there used to be, it seems to me a few years back, there was a young leader in South Africa. I don't recall his name, but he was sort of a youth leader. And he was considered very radical, and but I guess he was considered a possibility for the a leader of the country. You remember his name?
Yes, he's the one who arranged the walkout against Cyril Ramaphosa. His name, Julius Malema. They actually come from quite close by villages in the north of the country in the Limpopo province. So Julius Malema was exactly as you said, a firebrand nationalist. He was part and parcel of this radical movement of the youth in the African National Congress. Then the dilemma is Julius Malema decided to up the pressure on mining, and he called for nationalization because the ruling party, the African National Congress, used to call for nationalization, the Freedom Charter, in 1955. And that got him thrown out. But guess who threw him out? Who was in charge of the disciplinary committee? None other than Cyril Ramaphosa. And this happened just at the time of the Marikana massacre. And it was very much seen as this upstart beginning to move in on the old guard's turf, physically moving in and organizing a base and appealing to the mine workers. In fact, in Marikana, about 2 hours to the northwest of Johannesburg, Julius Malema's party, the Economic Freedom Fighters, they do really well. They get the majority of the vote in most of those mining communities. And so that was one of the reasons the police mobilized very hard against the mine workers in August 2012, because they even admitted quite openly that they felt Julius Malema was coming in and threatening Cyril Ramaphosa, the major local owner of Lawmin. And just to remind you, Per, the company Lawmin was run by a really wicked man, a kind of Donald Trump of his day, called Tiny Roland. And this guy was so awful that the conservative prime minister of England, of Britain, Ed Heath, he called him the unacceptable face of capitalism. Now, that's a pretty revealing statement from a Tory prime minister. And this is the same company, with no ethics whatsoever. I might add that the World Bank, which I know in Portland you've got really good people organizing periodically against the World Bank, but they made this lawman at this place, Marikana, with Cyril Ramaphosa, their number one poster child for community corporate social investment. So you can see they put $150 million in both loans and equity offers into this company, Lawmin, just before the massacre. They had no damn clue that this was a bubble that was about to burst on them with blood all over, with 34 miners dead, and one day another 10 had been killed. Lots of tension. The tensions continued. They had a five-month strike of all the platinum miners. There were about 80,000 mine workers that went on strike in 2014. So 5 months because of the prevailing conditions. And they're only asking for about $1,000 a month. That's their demand. $1,000 for the toughest work I can imagine, going deep down into the earth and using rock drills, incredibly heavy and dangerous drills to knock out the platinum. And, you know, the platinum was very much in demand. You might have heard about Volkswagen. Down in California, they were caught cheating on their emissions in 2015. And that destroyed the platinum market because they'd made a claim that their diesel engines were emitting less emissions, and the diesel engines needed the platinum. And the platinum then suddenly went into a complete crash. So Lawmin today, just about a month ago, more or less went bankrupt. At its peak, it was nearly $30 billion in value. It was sold for about $380 million. Junk sale out of 33,000 workers, 12,000 will be fired in the next couple of years. So there's a bit of a discussion. Shouldn't we nationalize? Shouldn't we penalize that company for the massacre? However, with a new president, Cyril Ramaphosa, we won't count on that happening from above.
Well, I'm glad to see that Julius Malema is still active. I hadn't heard anything about him for a while. I thought maybe he kind of dropped out of sight. I get the impression sometime that, you know, that when Africa first became liberated, there were some wonderful leaders, you know, like Nkrumah and Thomas Sankara in Burkina Faso, and
exactly
what they have now are these like the compradors, you know. And
yeah, I talked to Julius Malema exactly about that a few months ago. I said, hey, it's time for your next degree. He just finished his honors degree. He needs a master's to become a book that would actually articulate a radical philosophy. And so he's mulling that over right now. But yeah, this is a great young guy who used to be corrupt, used to be a tsotsi, as we say, a thug. But then he's turned to the left and he's breathed a lot of fire into his party, the EFF. He's got a superb couple of leaders next to him, Floyd Chivambu and Mbuyisini Ndlozi. So you should hear more about them, I think. Hopefully they'll be a little bit more visible in the United States scene, but in particular, the challenges that they've been making. They go to the parliament. They have about 30 seats. They wear red overalls, and they completely busted up. Today they just walked out and discussed, but they will often engage in exceptionally interesting guerrilla theater inside the parliament, especially using the images of the old ANC, using their songs, using the toy toy, the dance, using the amandla, the power structure, the power chant. And those kinds of memes, you know, they hark back to the serious nationalists, really to when Mandela was a radical youth himself. So I have some strong hopes. They're getting about 10% of the support in the electorate. The next election's just over a year away, and you know, they may go up to 15. They're really the lifeblood of politics at the moment. There's also a centrist party that's getting about 25% and center right. And then we have the nationalist leaders from the African National Congress. They're 50 to 55, and now they've probably got another 8 years. My gut feeling is that Cyril Ramaphosa will get sufficient support amongst the electorate and rebuild this ANC, unlike the old president, Jacob Zuma, who more or less wrecked it, that we might see in about a year and a bit, the ANC reelected. But by no means are the contradictions going to be resolved, especially because, say, Wednesday we'll have a big budget, you know, the national budget announced. And by all accounts, it's going to be following the advice of Standard & Poor's and Fitch and Moody's, the New York credit agencies. That means cutting the social spending, raising the tax on poor people. So the struggles that people have here, which are occasionally successful, free tertiary education was a great struggle, and at the end of last year it was won, or free AIDS medicines, which has been an extraordinary struggle against the United States pharmaceutical companies. And as a result, we have 4 million people who are HIV positive who get these free medicines where it used to cost $10,000 a year. And as a result, the life expectancy has gone from 54 about 15 years ago. Now it's 52, now it's 64. That's quite a heroic movement of the Treatment Action Campaign against U.S. Capitol, against local politicians who went along with U.S. Capitol. So that's the kind of politics that we're experiencing. Mm-hmm. A lot of turmoil, the most intense class struggles in the world, most corrupt corporate elites, and now we have their favorite politician in the presidency. So it's going to be a wild ride.
Oh boy. Well, let's make a brief announcement here. We are having a Kickstarter campaign. We need your support to continue to make Portland a city of media makers. And you can join our Kickstarter campaign by going to the KBOO website. And I want to thank special thanks to LaBrie and William, who gave to our Kickstarter this morning. And so this is something very important. This is something that sustains KBOO. And we need to keep this keep the momentum going that we've built up over these last 50 years. We are talking to Patrick Bond, who's a professor at Wits University in South Africa, about the way Africa is being looted. And I would like to bring up the horrible example. It's not in your article, but it's, you know, the coltan mining in Congo done by slave labor. And it's these rare minerals are what keeps all our electronic gadgets and toys and machinery in operation. And it rests on this horrible way of depleting the Congo, which has been actually raped ever since, 1960, if not longer. And I'm wondering, do you have any idea how does coltan get to the richer world? It's dug out of the ground in Congo by slave workers. Where does it go after that?
Well, the main two vehicles are the two most important neighboring countries on the upper east side of the Congo, and those are Rwanda and Uganda, and they're both run by dictators very friendly with Washington. One of them is Paul Kagame, and he usually wins his elections with about 99%, and the other is Yoweri Museveni. He's also been in power forever and is quite a brutal dictator. Now, the U.S. loves this stuff, right, and the transnationals that use the rare earth minerals and these minerals for electronics, and they usually work hand in glove with warlords, and the warlords are the ones that are doing the massacres. I mean, 5 million people killed in the last 20 years in this area puts it as pretty much the most violent genocidal site on earth. And it's driven by those of us using these little smartphones and our laptops and all sorts of things. So we really have to start unpacking what goes into our electronics. There's a wonderful film, Story of Electronics. .org at the Story of Stuff website. Pick up a little bit more about people fighting for justice in this mineral extractive zone. But it's part of a general problem in the DRC, and it goes back to the assassination of, again, one of the great Africans, Patrice Lumumba. Mm-hmm. He was only in power for a few months, and it was the Belgians and the CIA who offed him, and that was to put in eventually the leader for about three decades, Mobutu Sese Seko, and he was absolutely in bed with U.S. Capital, especially Templesman, and those guys looted the place. But, I mean, it's an incredibly wealthy country in terms of what's underground. It's very underdeveloped. There's very bad roads and infrastructure, but where you find, for example, our own South African soldiers, about 1,200 that are posted in that area, so they're called peacekeepers. But we think they're more or less watchdogs for South African businesses. You know, one of them is Anglo Gold Ashanti, Human Rights Watch caught them working hand in glove with the warlords. This was a dozen years ago. They apologized, but it's that type of thing that's going on pretty regularly. And the only way to build a movement, there is a wonderful Washington, D.C. advocacy group, Friends of the Congo, that your listeners might want to tap into. And please definitely check out what is going on inside all of the consumer goods that pass through all of our hands, because they all have blood on them.
Well, you know, we actually have an eyewitness to President Eisenhower giving the orders to assassinate Lumumba. It happened at a meeting late in Eisenhower's term, in which they were talking about the Congo situation, and President Eisenhower said, let's get rid of him, or said words to that effect. And this is reported by this army officer who is taking notes. So we actually have a witness to this order. Mm-hmm. And then not too long after that, the CIA's poison expert, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, apparently came to Leopoldville with a tube of poison toothpaste. Mm-hmm. And they were going to get rid of
the same.
And they were going to get rid of Lumumba that way, but then the Belgians got him first.
That's right. And this very same time, down in the Durban, South Africa, the CIA worked very closely in 1962, a little bit after Lumumba's assassination, CIA with the South African security forces of apartheid, to identify Nelson Mandela's movement. They tracked him. He was dressed up as a chauffeur, driving a white guy along the road, and they caught him and put him in jail. Ultimately, for 27 years. So that CIA has so much to answer for here.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, with the AFRICOM, it's just rebooted. There's a guy called Nick Terse who writes quite.
All right. He's been a guest on this show a couple times. So there's no coincidence that we have the Africa. We're looting Africa, and it's full of U.S. military bases.
Mm-hmm. It's actually, you could argue, more subtle. And the most dangerous part of U.S. imperialism must be the soft power and the economic power. But now Donald Trump is wrecking the State Department's legitimacy, and wrecking its staff. You know, I mean, Rex Tillerson is hated by the imperialists, say, at the New York Times, because the ability of the United States to present itself properly in the world is shrinking quickly, and the ability of suave diplomats to pretend that everything's fine back home in Washington is very limited, especially when Donald Trump uses "asshole" to describe these countries.
I'm afraid we're going to have to end. We're at the end of our show. We've been talking with Patrick Bond, and he's written some articles for Pambazooka. Can we find your articles anywhere else?
Yes, if your listeners know counterpunch.org, you'll find
Counterpunch. Okay.
Yeah, and I think the main thing, we're working on the BRICS, so we hope we'll stay in touch with folks in the U.S., because where the U.S. is imperialism, we're very worried about Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, sub-imperialism. Mm-hmm. And that'll occur in July here in Johannesburg, because they're having a big meeting. So thanks for being a good listener, and we'll continue to talk, I hope.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much for being with us. That was Patrick Bond, professor at Wits University in South Africa. You can find his articles in Counterpunch and Pambazooka. So thank you very much, sir.
We'll see you again, yeah. Bye-bye.
So stay tuned to KBOO. It's your radio station, and as long as you keep maintaining it the way you have for the last 50 years. So stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 9:59. At 10 o'clock, we have Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 11:15, we have Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Between the Covers, look back at the archival interview with the late Portland author Ursula K. Le Guin. At 11:30, we have Words and Pictures, talks to animator Gil Noonan. And just a reminder, we have a Kickstarter going. KBOO has been giving people a chance to learn, produce, engineer, host, write, interview, and create all kinds of media for almost 50 years. And this is your chance to continue that another 50 years into the future. And we'd like to also thank LeBrie and William for donating.
KBOO is a drop-off site for art supplies from now until March 5th. We're collecting them to support the walk entitled Water is Life, for those yet to come. The walk aims to address climate change, discuss renewable energy options, and also to share the learnings of Standing Rock with our youth. The walkers will stop by schools and community centers to engage the community in creating murals expressing identity and visions for the future. Art supplies needed for creating murals include Nova Color acrylic mural paint, rollers, trays, buckets, and more. Please bring your art supply donations to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Monday through Friday from 9 to 5, from now until March 5th. More information about the supplies needed and the walk can be found at KBOO.